This audio interview with Kelsey Suter was recorded on 17 September 2018 in Cowra by Nikkei Australia's Mayu Kanamori and Masako Fukui. This interview was recorded for the Cowra Voices geolocative storytelling app, created in 2019 and launched to coincide with the 75th anniversary of the Cowra breakout. For more information, please refer to the overview in this archive.
My name is Kelsey Suter. I am 26 years old. I was born and raised in Cowra, and I'll be speaking about Sakura Avenue. Sakura Avenue is a part of the reconciliation efforts between Cowra and Japan. So it's just one of the many things we have here in Cowra that represent our friendship and our connection to Japan. So I'm not quite sure how many years ago it started, but ever since I've been here and been a child, there have been cherry blossom trees or crabapple trees planted from the cemetery to the Japanese gardens. So, you know, that idea of people can walk down it and look at the different trees and look at the different people who sponsor the trees, the Cowra people and the Japanese people.
So how does the sponsorship stuff work?
So it's through council. People can opt to buy a tree and a plaque, and then it's organised where the tree is planted. And normally it's with the Cowra person who sponsored it. Mostly it's children. A lot of families do it for their children. And the Japanese representative who comes to Cowra to plant the tree together.
So how did you get to plant the tree there? So can you tell me that story from sort of beginning to end?
I was probably 10 years old when my parents decided to buy my sister and myself a tree. And then we met up with council who, you know, supplied the tree, supplied the plaque, and they set down a date. And I remember that my sister and I were in our school clothes still, and we went out of school to do it. And we did our trees with members from the Japanese Air Force. So they had flown all the way to Cowra just to plant a tree with us. And it was a really great day. I can remember, you know, these giant Japanese men in uniform, and they helped us plant the tree, and then they put the plaque in place, and we got a couple of photos. So, yeah, that's how it went.
Okay, so just backtrack to when you planted the tree. Can you remember how you, like, the digging process and all of that? Can you give us a picture? Imagine me looking at the app,
yeah,
at Sakura Avenue. So I might be standing in front of your tree. So
I remember the Air Force members. They were the ones who grabbed the shovels, obviously, because we were quite small and tiny. If I was 10, my sister would have been 8 at the time. So they dug the giant holes, and essentially they lifted the giant trees into the ground, and we just had a hand on them. So, you know, it wasn't a matter of us little girls being able to plant trees. They helped us along the way. And then, yeah, they helped us dig the soil back into the ground and put the plaque into place. So it was probably, there's been hundreds of them planted, but it was just before the Japanese garden. So it was probably one of the last few that have been planted in recent years. Yeah.
What's on the plaque? So can you tell us about the plaque?
So each plaque has a number. And so that represents the number, the person that they're up to, you know, the number of trees they're up to. My number was 880 and my sister's was 881. And each one has my name on it, and my sister's has hers on it. And it'll say, and it also says Japanese Air Force. So representatives from the Japanese Air Force.
Okay. And what do you remember thinking, like, and you and your sister, like, were you giggling or were you scared or, like, can you remember the emotions?
We thought it was pretty fun. We thought it was a good opportunity to get our school. but it was a really nice afternoon because we got to meet these Japanese men who, I mean, living in a small rural town, we have a lot of connection to Japan, but you don't necessarily meet Japanese people or anyone from overseas when you're that age. So it was really nice to be able to converse with them, and they couldn't quite speak English, but they could speak broken English. So it was nice to converse with them and learn a little bit about Japan and being in the Air Force. They told us a lot about how Japanese military works. So that was a really interesting conversation to have. They tell us all the different training about having to, like, the training to fly the years it takes, you know, all the protocols, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
What was the most special thing about that day?
The most special part of that day was definitely being able to meet the Japanese members of the Air Force. But also the one thing that sticks out in my mind more than anything is the photo we took on the day. So my sister and I are in our school uniform. It's an overcast day and we're next to these really tall Japanese men, complete in uniform with medals, very prim and proper. And, you know, we just got us two short girls next to them. So that's definitely the one thing that I remember from the day.
So tell us a little bit more. Can we go back now? Because we talked a little bit about the planting. Can you go back to re-explain that, the whole process of the sakura trees and what that means, what you think that means for Kaura?
So the process of planting the trees involves getting a tree and plaque from council, and then it's organised that a Japanese member of society, so it might be the Air Force, it might just be, you know, a resident of a town in Japan, they will come and sponsor the tree with a Kaura resident. And to me, that's a really lovely symbol of friendship and reconciliation between the two countries, especially after our prisoner of war breakout. To me, it just symbolises friendship and I'm moving on from such a tragedy that, you know, only happened over the hill.
Do you go and visit the tree, please?
My tree's no longer up.
Oh.
Yeah, a number of trees have been hit by drivers and unfortunately my tree was one of them. So the plaque is currently sitting at Council Depot waiting for a new batch of trees to be planted. But I did used to always walk past the tree and you sort of stop and you read it and you think about back to that day. And it was always just such a nice memory to be able to walk past it and see my plaque and my sister's plaque and how the tree grows, of course. It was always fascinating to see if it had the blooms out or if it had lost all its leaves because it's winter or, yeah.
I wanted to know what it means for a Kaura resident, a child, to be given a tree in their name and to grow up with it. And what it means as an adult now.
Yeah. I think as a child it gives you a good understanding of the relationship between Kaura and Japan. It's a part of that learning process that we all receive when we grow up in Kaura about, you know, our relationship with Japan. We learn it all through school. So it's just another element of what we learn. But as an adult, the way I think about the tree is it's sort of the thing that is left behind in Kaura. So no matter where you go, no matter what you do, your plaque is there and your tree is there. So part of you is always in Kaura. I mean, Kaura will always be part of me, but part of what you did as a child is still there in Kaura and thriving and growing as a tree.
And perhaps you can just, would you reflect on what it might mean for a visitor like me to come and look at that?
I think for a visitor, it'd be a really good learning experience. And it gives little hints to stories about the people who live both in Kaura and Japan. I always found that anytime I walked past one of the plaques, I would wonder who that person was in Kaura if I didn't already know them and who that person was in Japan. So I think it gives a nice little hints of stories about people as you walk along and you read each one. Yeah.
That's lovely. So how would you tell the peace and reconciliation story? Like, as someone who's grown up here, what does it mean to you?
As I said, when you grow up in Kaura, one of the main things that you're taught from kindergarten to year 12 is the importance of the friendship and the reconciliation of Japan and Kaura. We have a school exchange. We have, you know, our Sakura Avenue. We have a peace bell. We have a POW camp. You're taught about the significance of that history and the significance of what happened after. So the friendship between the two countries, the attempts to repair, you know, a friendship that was once broken because of wartime. And you also get taught the significance of what just happened here. It was the only inland battle of World War II in Australia. So for that to have happened just across the hill from where I've always lived here, it's pretty mind-blowing, and it's always wonderful to be able to learn about that about that history, and they're always uncovering new stories. I know just last year they uncovered a new story about an Italian prisoner of war, you know, who built an electrical hut. So they're always constantly finding things out about that time, and it's really fascinating to be along with that ride.
That's fantastic. Thanks.
My name is Kelsey Suter. I'm 26 years old. I was born and bred in Cowra, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sakura Avenue.
Is this anything else?
Yeah, I want to know why, in your words, why you think that your mum and dad decided to buy you and your sister a cherry blossom tree.
It's almost the reason I think my parents decided to buy myself and my sister a plaque and a tree. I think it's almost tradition for children here in Cowra to purchase a tree. Hundreds have. It'd be almost uncountable how many kids have grown up here with their tree growing on the side of the road. And yeah, it's also part of a tradition, I think, where a lot of Cowra residents leave their names. I know our family's name is on a brick up near the Cowra Japanese Garden because it's part of a path. So that path, the idea of path to reconciliation. So a lot of families chose to do that a number of years ago. So whether it's a tree or a brick, it's just part of tradition of growing up in Cowra.
And do you see that as like a citizens, each individual's contribution to peace in a wider sense?
Yeah, I see it as part of a contribution of each resident to peace and to show an understanding about history and what's happened here. So, yeah.
Do you think that your being a Cowra resident and being a part of this this peace story, I suppose, does that make you see the world differently or anything? Like, can you sort of extrapolate it out to a bigger view?
I think the history of Cowra and growing up here does make you see the world a little bit differently. I think I'm more inclined to thinking peacefully, maybe even a little bit pacifist, just because you know the horrors of war. I wasn't born when this happened, but it just happened over the hill. And it's sort of hard to believe that could happen in your hometown. And then the steps that the two nations have taken to become more peaceful together after those horrors, I've lost my train of thought, sorry. What was your question again?
I was sort of asking you to extrapolate wider,
Sorry. Did you want me to start all that again?
Yeah, if you want.
So being born and bred in Cowra and being a resident for most of my life, you learn about the atrocities and the horrors that happened just over the hill from where I live. It's really hard to comprehend. And you also learn about the peace efforts that both nations have attempted, whether it be, you know, the Peace Bell or Sakura Avenue and the planting of cherry trees. We're trying our very best to bring Cowra and Japan together. And when you look at other atrocities that are happening into the world, the different wars, you sort of get this idea that you want peace, you know, because you've grown up learning about peace efforts. It would just be nice to see other towns across Australia and across the world, you know, adopt those symbols of friendship with nations they've been at war at or nations they've had conflicts with.
What about some of the other, like, as you said, the Peace Bell, all of those things? Growing up here, you know, they mean something to you as...
Do you have personal stories about any of those places that
they're talking
about?
Probably the POW camp. Are you doing a one on POW camp? Yep. So the prisoner of war camp has always been something that I've always walked past, I've always walked through. As a child, I found it really fascinating the different parts of the camp that are still, there's remnants of all these buildings and objects that were there in the 1940s. One of the things my sister and I used to always do is go into the electrical hut or the remains of the electrical hut that are near the camp. And we used to play in there, you know, pretend it was a kitchen and, you know, be chefs. And looking back, that might not have been such a great idea because it's a historical artifact, but it was always fun sort of imagining what had happened there. And I remember in the hut there were two slabs of what looked like a metal, and I always wondered what was on those slabs. So I used to think it was a kitchen and that there was a stove placed there. I've only just learned as I'm older that it was actually an electrical hut. So it was probably some sort of radio communications equipment that was placed there.
Anything else you did that? It's a bit naughty.
Oh, man, don't tell council I did that. They put a gate up around it now.
So we can't use that bit?
Oh, you can use that bit. That should be fine. This is years before they put a fence up now. So this was years and years and years ago, probably 10, 15 years ago. The Peace Bell is always something. Is always a place that a lot of children go to. Growing up, you tend to ring the Peace Bell a lot just to be an absolute nuisance because it's very, very loud, and you always sort of do the joke that you're going to put somebody's head into the Peace Bell and then ring it. That would be horrible. You'd be deaf or you'd be hit by a huge bell. It's not until when you get older that you realize just how important that it's one of the few in the world that we have. And, you know, it's made out of the coins and it's, you know, melted down coins, and the whole structure has got symbolic meaning in what it's been made with and the different style choices. So when you're a kid, it's a bit of fun, you know, to be ringing the Peace Bell. And then as you get older, you realise the significance of having a Peace Bell in Cowra.
Do you have any memories of events, particular events, like someone visiting or...?
Nothing comes to mind as a child, but as an adult, there are some certain things. So I work at our local newspaper and I'm a journalist. So I always get to cover a lot of the different events that occur, you know, World Peace Day, during the time of the Cowra Breakout anniversary each year. And it still amazes me, you know, there are people that gather for this, you know, to celebrate the significance and commemorate the significance of these events. And it's very moving and somber to see some of the wreath laying ceremonies that occur up at the war cemetery, some of the commemorations at the prisoner of war camp each year, and the fact that they're still alive and people are still remembering. It's really heartwarming to think that people are still keeping these traditions alive.
What's special about Cowra for you as a kid growing up here and now an adult and working here?
Yeah. For me, what's special about Cowra is it's always been a town about peace, about peacekeeping efforts and attempts, and it's very peaceful here. You know, you grow up, there's not a lot of noise, you know, and there's a lot of history to reflect upon wherever you walk, wherever you drive down. There's something to reflect upon in Cowra's history. But also you make, you know, a lot of my family are still here. A lot of my friends are still here, and they've always got that connection. No matter where you go, you've got that connection back to home, back to Cowra. And yeah. Maybe one day, but not right now.
Okay. That's lovely. Thank you so much.
That's all right. I was going to say...
The tree died. That's a shame.
Yeah, it got hit by a drunk driver about...
Well, maybe we should include that. No?
Let's just record it and see if we...
Okay. So I think it was about 10 years ago now, a gentleman came to our front door. It was about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and he had my plaque in his hand and the plaque of what he said was his grandson's. And he'd said a drunk driver had come along and hit both trees. So, you know, they were immediately taken out of the ground, what was left of them. And he returned our plaque to us, which was really lovely. He didn't have to go out of his way to do that, but... I believe the plaques at the moment are with council.
And trees are going to be replanted?
Yes, I believe they have the plaques waiting for when they get the next shipment of trees, whenever that may be. When they first started planting the trees, it was all cherry blossom trees. But then they discovered that crabapple trees do better in our climate. So they started planting them because they look very similar. Mm-hmm. But I could touch on Sakura Avenue a little bit more if you like. Yes, so when I was studying art, I studied art at university in Wollongong. And for my very last major artwork, I had this sudden thought to be inspired by my very own backyard. So I did an artwork based on cherry trees. So I really was fascinated by the juxtaposition of you grow up in a backyard, so there's childhood, these childhood memories, they're all very happy, you know, you're with you and your sister running around outside. Just up the road a little bit, the prisoner of war camp breakout happened. So I was really fascinated by that juxtaposition of violence and peace and history and child, and you know, shared history and personal histories within the same space of a backyard. So I gathered a lot of my childhood objects, so Barbie dolls and anything we could find, my dad's tools. My dad has a bullet casing that he found in the backyard one day, so we grabbed that. And I made 238 fabric cherry blossoms and wrapped them around the objects. So this idea that we have a very happy childhood and a very personal story about our backyard, but you can't escape the fact that there's this history attached to the location that you are in. So, yeah, that's been a while since I've explained that artwork.
You got a photo of that artwork?
I sure do. I can give you that one of them. Yeah, yeah.
That would be great.
Does it have a title?
It was called Death in the Backyard, which is not a very pleasant title, but, yeah, I was trying to touch on the happiness of our childhood versus the atrocities of, you know, of the horrors of death and war and what happens when you put these two things in the same location. Yeah.
Kelsey Suter, Amos, take 2.